So today's message, I picked that verse as a theme, and here's where it comes from. It's from Isaiah chapter 6. And at this point in his life, Isaiah was pretty much someone like you and me. He was a normal person. And God gave him a vision of how holy God is. And his first response was, "I'm not there." And it talks about a coal coming down with an angel and touches his lips. And basically the salvation experience, God forgives the sins. And then Isaiah's response to God's first question is pretty cool. And that's where the theme of this morning's message comes from. It's Isaiah chapter 6, starting in verse 1. "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple." Imagine a temple and the train of a robe filling the entire temple. My guess is it was probably purple or maroon or crimson. Those were the royal colors. "Above him were seraphs." And Libby, you could probably draw this better than anybody in the room. "But each one had six wings. With two wings they covered their faces. With two they covered their feet. And with two they were flying." So not your typical picture of what you would imagine a flying creature. "And they were calling to one another, 'Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory.'" Can you imagine Isaiah seeing this picture of the throne, these angels, whatever they were, seraphs, and saying, "Holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory. At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. 'Woe to me,' I cried. 'I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty.' Then one of the seraphs flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, 'See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for.' Then I heard the voice," and that's basically what we go through when we experience salvation. We see God in his glory. We realize we are sinners. We ask forgiveness. We receive salvation. And here's what I like, the very next step in that process. After our sin has been atoned for, "Then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?' And I said, 'Here am I, send me.'" And that's the verse that's written on the plaque that we're going to start putting names on out at Faith Bible Camp. So when kids come in the dining hall and they see that plaque on the wall, they'll see names like Guy Burkhead and Matt Jackson and Elizabeth Powell. And all these kids from their generation or their counselors who have gone on to serve the Lord as pastors, as in ministry around the world and here in the States. And I'm excited for that. I think it's a visual that our kids need to see, that people do respond to that call yet today. Who am I going to send? Who's going to go and speak for the Lord? And somebody raises their hand and says, "Here I am, send me." And I'm so fortunate that I am in a position and a job where I get to do that. But my message today is that you get to do that too. Because just last week at a missions conference, one of the workshops I went to was called Missions as Business. And the whole thrust of that workshop that I went to was, regardless of what you do for a living or where you go to school or how old you are, your business is a mission. The way you conduct your work, the way you interact with your coworkers, you still point people to Christ. Regardless of whether you're running a business here in the States or working for a business. And his point was, why not open a business and be a ministry as your business? I like what Paul did. You know the story of Paul. He was Saul before he became Paul. He persecuted the church. He was blinded by a light from heaven, became Paul, one of the most educated, highly respected of the elite, became basically a nobody who was hated by the elite. And his whole job was to spread the gospel. And as far as business as a ministry, he made tents for a living after that. And he financed everywhere he went because he didn't want to be a burden to the church. And he would go into a town and build tents. And my guess is they were probably pretty good tents. And he left these little churches all over the place. One of my favorite stories of Paul is that he in his thinking, said, we need to go here. And he grabbed Timothy and a couple other people, and they started, and the door got closed. And sometimes that happens to us. God closes a door to where we want to go. And Paul didn't just stop. He went to another place and the door got shut. It literally says in Acts, about the middle of Acts, 14, 15, 16, somewhere around there, that Jesus just wouldn't let them go there. And in his sleep, he had a dream from what they call a Macedonian man saying, come over here, come over here. One of the cool parts of that is that Macedonian man is Eastern Europe. And our Romania team goes to Eastern Europe. The Philippian church was over in that part of the world. And even Paul got a vision. We're going to go over here. No, don't go there. Okay, we're going to go over here. No, don't go there. We want you to go over here. And he was willing to go. So sometimes the doors get shut for various reasons. Sometimes you have to knock a few times and at least keep moving. And another favorite example of that for me is Gideon. And most of you probably know the story of Gideon in Judges, the book of Judges. It's around chapter 6. And Gideon is a farmer, which most of the people that live in Midwestern Illinois can relate to. And he got the call to become a soldier. And I would be a Gideon. I would totally be a Gideon because I said, okay, God, let's just make sure you really want me to give up my farming and become a soldier. And he put the fleece out, and God answered exactly the way he was supposed to. And then Gideon did what I would do. Okay, God, let's make sure that wasn't an accident. Let's do it again tonight, and let's just double check and make sure. And sure enough, the answer comes back, yes, Gideon, you are supposed to be a soldier. And so here the soldier is still questioning, is this really what I'm supposed to do? Because he could only round up 33,000 soldiers. And he was going against a valley so big that you couldn't even count the number of camels that the opposing Amalekites had. A huge army. I don't know how many were in it, but it was so big you couldn't count them. And he was going to go against them with 33,000 men. And then God spoke to Gideon and said, no, you don't need that many people. So send them down to the stream and have them get a drink of water. And depending on how some of them just dropped their stuff and drank the water. Some of them kept a hold of their sword and shield and kind of lapped it up. And God told Gideon, I only want the ones that did that. And that came to 33,000. No, missed a step. 33,000. And then he said, some of these guys are married. Some of them have family and kids. Some of them just don't want to go fight. Tell them they can go home. No questions asked. There's nothing wrong, nothing right. Just if they don't want to fight this battle, let them go home. So the 33,000 dropped to 10,000. That was still too many, and God said, send them down to the stream. He ended up with 300 guys to fight an army that you couldn't count their camels. And Gideon's response was, God, there is no way in this wide world that 300 guys are going to beat an army that we can't even count. And God probably smiled and said, Gideon, you're right. There's no way that you can fight this battle and win it. And the whole message is that you go in trusting in God's strength, not your own. So in our missions trips that we've done with Faith Bible Camp, and I'm going to share some of the Russia pictures and some of the other stuff, we go in with a plan of action, thinking this is how we're going to do missions, and this is what we're going to teach, and this is how we're going to do it. But as soon as you go and pick your team, everything starts changing. And yeah, you direct the process. But the thing we try to make sure everybody knows is it's not our battle that we're fighting in taking a missions team. The God has His purpose for what's going to happen. God has His plans for how it's going to turn out. God has His plans for the kids over there that need to hear the gospel. And our response is, answer the question, are you going to go? And my biggest encouragement to churches when I talk about us taking the camp, taking our missions trips, is you got a missions board out there. And probably on your missions board are missionaries who have never, ever had a visitor from the States come and see them where they work and bring a team to help them do something that they really could use help doing. And my encouragement, even though you may work at CAT or you may work at Walmart or you may be a farmer, don't turn off the idea that God may say to you, someone on that bulletin board out there could use your help. It may be a young group going over and painting a church somewhere. It might be, I was talking earlier, one of my best friends from Wheaton was a pastor. And he quit his job as a pastor and became the executive director in Fort Myers, Florida, of an organization called Echo Farm. He's a city boy, never has no clue what farming does. But God called him to quit his job, become the executive director of Echo Farms, and they are focused in the tropical world, where a huge farm is an acre. And they don't know how to till the soil. They don't know how to save seed and grow things that would produce. So there's a demonstration farm in Fort Myers, Florida, where they grow and they go all over the world and they collect best farming practices. And my buddy Bruce is in charge of it. And he would love for a spring break group of teenagers to come down and help at Echo Farm in Fort Myers. And God says, that's cool. There's a direct flight from Peoria to Punta Gorda, which is 10 miles from Echo Farm, and it's cheap. So God just opens doors gradually, and I've directly had the request, Twig, you live in a group of farmers. You should bring a group of farm kids down and help out down here, especially after the hurricanes went through. They had to rebuild a lot of stuff. And I'm like, Bruce, we can only come in the summer or spring break. But that's something on the horizon, that God just opens doors. My Russian story started with John and Sonnet Barr, and they started our Romania program. John and Sonnet were missionaries with United World Mission, and he was in charge of youth missions. And he came to Faith Bible Camp and said, we got a bunch of English camps going on all over the world, and between his cousin and he, there was one discipleship camp, which meant that camp was basically for Christian kids already, and it was in Romania. And Mike and John decided, we're going to take a missions trip where American teenagers teach the Bible to Romanian teenagers. And it wasn't an English camp. It wasn't a working camp. It was a normal camp, just like ours at Faith Bible Camp. And one of the first team members on that team was Heather Windisch, 19 years ago. So I don't think she's here today, but she was one of the guinea pigs. And we were scared to death when we went, because most of us didn't even know where Romania was, and had heard about the persecution they'd gone through, and all of us fell in love with Romania. And we've been going there for 19 years and taken over 100 teenagers to camp in Romania. And it's literally like camping at Faith Bible Camp, except for American teenagers are doing the teaching. And then the Romanian teenagers offer a second week of ministry opportunities through their church. We did all of that this year at Faith Bible Camp. So I put together a slideshow. It starts by going to Russia. When you watch the slideshow, it's about 15 minutes long. And it's hard to tell the story of a missions trip through pictures. Because when you watch the slideshow, it's going to be kind of like just watching a National Geographic slideshow of all these pretty places. But just like Paul learned, just like Gideon learned, just like I've learned, when you go on a missions trip, it's all about the personal relationships that you build and the things you watch happen. And I'll just describe a little example of that. We had hoped to take a team of 10 to 15 people to Russia. And probably that many people were interested. But especially the college age, targeting college age students. But as we got putting meetings together, we started telling people, but you're not allowed to share the gospel. You know, that's the rules that are implemented in Russia right now. You cannot be a missionary in Russia. You cannot share the gospel. Your visa would be revoked. You might get fined. You would jeopardize people's careers if you put your pride ahead of the rules that you agreed to up front. And so there were four of us. It went from about, like kind of like Gideon, went from about 10 to 15 down to about four people. And we went to Russia in the middle of the winter when we knew it was going to be cold. We knew it was going to be snowy. And we did an English camp. And while we were there, we talked about Russians don't celebrate Christmas. I'm not even sure they get Christmas Day off of work because it's a religious holiday. The church celebrates it, the Russian Orthodox Church, and that's about it. But New Year's, I'm telling you, is huge in Moscow. The entire city plans for months, and it's a huge deal, New Year's. Most people don't even go to bed on New Year's Eve. And they have the story of Grandfather Frost and the Snow Maiden, just like we have Santa Claus and all these elves. And go home and Google the story of Grandfather Frost and the Snow Maiden. It's a pretty clever story. It's fantastic. And I got to meet Grandfather Frost, who was probably 30 foot tall. It was a statue with the Snow Maiden. I'm holding hands with the Snow Maiden. I can barely reach her hand. That's how big it is. I went to ice castles just down from Gorky Park. And the whole time we're doing this, I'm hanging out with Russian teenagers. And it was fantastic. We're starting to develop relationships, and we're starting to become friends. I found out that the Moscow subway system is world class. Ballets perform in the Moscow subway. That's how special it is. There's over 200 train stops. Every train stop is literally an architectural masterpiece in itself. Some of them are made completely out of marble. Some of them are made out of tiny little mosaic ceramic tiles. Some of them are made of brass statues. And I've got pictures of all that stuff. And it just is a picture. But it represents where we went and the relationships we developed with the kids, with the teens. So the slideshow kind of starts out going to Russia, and I guess I need to preface that too. We had to change planes somewhere in the world. And the girls, the college girls, really wanted to go to Paris and change planes there really badly. And it just so happens, the way God works things out, one of my best friends, who I met him as a 15-year-old at camp in Romania, grew up and got a college degree in construction management and really got bent out of shape when his sister made more money than he did her first year out of beauty college. And he quit his construction job and went to beauty college. And when you see pictures of him, he is not a beauty college type guy. He has a big beard and he's scruffy and rides BMX bikes and he is the man's man. But he ended up being good at it and opened up a salon in Paris, and he got $350 for a lady's haircut. And people would fly into Paris. He would have a limousine pick them up at the airport, drive them to his home. He would cut their hair. The limousine would take them back to the airport, and he would make $350 for less than an hour's work. And talked to Vio, and I said, well, I'm coming through with the missions team. Is there any way that, you know, you can hang out with us? And go, oh, yeah, stay at my house. And I'm like, oh, well, we already have reservations at a hotel. And he said, no, you're staying at my house. We got to Paris, the Mercedes-Benz limousine picked us up at Charles de Gaulle, dropped us off at his doorstep. We did a walking tour of Paris for the entire day because our next flight didn't leave till the next day. We planned that. So basically, we got a free tour of Paris, we had a free place to stay, and at midnight, he cut all of our hair. And then we caught the plane the next day to Russia. So it starts out with flying to Paris, getting haircuts, and seeing Paris. Then we get to Russia, and we tour Russia, meet the Russians, and then we go to English camp, so you'll see all those pictures. And then after camp, we do some more touring around Russia before we left to come back to the States. But here's the cool thing about that mission trip. We weren't allowed to share the gospel. And at the camp, we made gingerbread houses, we made molasses cookies, we made the icing from scratch. I'd never done that before in my life, but I learned how to make icing and do a gingerbread house. You'll see pictures of the gingerbread houses. We sang Jingle Bells, we sang all the Christmas carols, we compared and contrasted all the Grandfather Frost and Snow Maiden customs with the Christmas and New Year's that we have. The only thing gospel related was everybody at that camp knew we were Christians. And everybody knew that we celebrated Christmas more than we celebrated New Year's. And the last night of camp, we kind of had our closing singing and work. It wasn't worship time. It was kind of, they call it the assembly, where you sing all the songs. And we sat down and we read the birth of Christ from the Gospel of Luke. And that wasn't breaking any religious rules in Russia, because the Orthodox Church believes that Christ was born in Bethlehem. And that was the end of camp. Then all the parents drove 2 hours out of Moscow to pick up their kids at camp. And one of the dads spent about 10 minutes talking to the American team. And then he posed this question right to me. And he doesn't know me from the man in the moon. He says, "Are there any camps in America that I could send my girls to?" One was 16 and one was 17. And I kind of smiled and I'm like, "Well, yeah, I'm a camp director. If you want to send your girls to the States, they can come to our camp for free." "Oh, that's good. That's good." And I'm like, "But I have to tell you first, here we have assemblies and the teens, they study English and they play games and it's all related to English." I said, "The camp that I direct is owned by some churches. This church is one of them." And I said, "Instead of English assemblies, we have assemblies where the children, the little children all the way up to high school, they study the Bible and they learn more about God." "Oh, it's okay, it's okay." You know, and so I'm like, "This is cool. Well, so let's see if he follows through." And I get home to the States and sure enough, I get an email from Russia and it's this father and he says, "I would like to send my girls to your camp." I'm like, "Great, we've never done this before." But we pursued it, and I had to fill out some government paperwork and do an official invitation and invite the girls. And I told the dad, I said, "They need to come at least for 3 weeks. It's a waste of time and your money if they don't at least come for 3 weeks." And I'm like, "What am I going to do with two Russian girls at camp for 3 weeks? You know, that's my busiest season." And then the college girls that went with me, two of them took 3 weeks off of work. And I said, "All right, you can have the entire cabin. It's all yours." And I'm telling you, by the time those girls came to the States, somebody knew they were coming and had two Russian Bibles that they gave them. And their first response was, "Oh, no, no, we're not supposed to have these." "Well, you can have a Bible in Russia. It's not illegal. You will never be punished for having a Bible in Russia." But the Russian Orthodox Church says, "No, only the priest is supposed to have a Bible, and only the priest is supposed to read it. He will tell you what it says." So here are these two Russian girls at camp sitting in on every single chapel time. And they have a Russian Bible, and we have the English Bibles. And I'm telling you, it was exciting to see these Russian girls learning our praise and worship songs, just like they learned the Jingle Bell songs, and watching them read their Bibles nonstop. One Sunday we went to Czechro Community Church and they were reading their Bibles the entire way there. Their first response to going to church in America was, "We love church here. It's not like ours." They loved the singing. They loved the personal relationships that happened there. And they loved the message because they could understand it and they knew what it meant. The girls took them to their church, Grace Presbyterian, so they got to go to Grace Presbyterian. Before they were going to fly home, we spent 3 days in Chicago with them and took them to Moody Church. They did not have a bad experience hanging out with a bunch of Christians while they were in America. And I look at it and say, we went to Russia trusting God, knowing we couldn't share the gospel. And God just smiled and said, "Watch what I get to do." And sent some girls to us. I remember Terry England, his son goes to Bethel Baptist College up in Minnesota. And he really wanted to go, but he backed out and said, "You know, if I can't share the gospel, I really think I should pick something else." And that's fine. Kyle's a great guy. And he didn't go. And Terry England directed one of those weeks of camp for the 11 and 12-year-olds. And he got to know the Russian girls and became friends with them. And they said, "We want to come see your farm." So the Russian girls take a weekend. They go up and they ride around. He was picking summer wheat, I think it was, in the combine. And he had two Russian girls sitting in his combine for an hour, and they weren't talking about farming. Here's the type of questions those Russian girls were asking. Do you really believe that Jesus is real? Do you really believe the Bible is real? Do you really believe that you can go to heaven when you die? For an hour, here's Pastor Terry talking with my two Russian teenage girls in his combine, sharing the gospel to no end. Now, they didn't pray to receive Christ in that combine, but God knows their heart. The seed has been planted. And Terry England sent his daughter to China on an English exchange just this past year because of his experience with the Russian girls in the combine. He saw the value of sometimes being a missionary is just being who you are and being you. So all that stuff was exciting. And then that was this time last year. We left just a couple days after Christmas. And then this summer we took a team to Romania of teenagers and did our traditional Bible camp in Romania. So that ends with the Romania camp. And again, these are my pictures. So some of the unique things that I did on my time off, I went to a dentist because I had a tooth fall out. And one of my former campers put a new tooth in my head for $300. It'd been about $1,200 here in the States. So this is a picture of me with the dentist. And then I got to go to one of my best friend Nalutsu's wedding, which was an honor and a privilege to go to a Romanian wedding and be one of the guests of honor at the wedding. And so some of my pictures are different than what some of the teenagers did. I did a lot of hanging out with old friends. So my pictures are primarily older kids. But the American teenagers, if you looked at their pictures, it would be all hanging out with younger kids. So I want to close and just give you a very quick slideshow of how the Faith Bible Camp overseas worked this year. And it was fun for me. And again, the very first steps sometimes are a little scary. But once you go, I thoroughly had a great time in Russia. Even though I was a little nervous about going, the father of those teenage girls sent me an email. And he said, I would like to host you and your friends an open-ended holiday on him in Moscow. And he's a pretty wealthy guy. He builds high-rise apartment buildings, and they have a summer home on a lake. He's a pretty influential guy in Russia. And I get a chance to go to his home. And all I have to do is buy an airplane ticket and go to Russia again. And again, that's a scary step, but it's worth it somewhere down the road. And I told him I couldn't come this year. It'd be probably a year or two before I could fit it in. But God opens those kind of doors to develop relationships to connect them to my missionary friends who work in Moscow. So let me show you the slideshow, and then I am done. And I will kind of narrate it as I go, because some of the pictures won't make a lot of sense unless you know where they're at. That's our team, and flying across the ocean. That's my friend Vio at his house. That's overlooking Paris. That's the Louvre on our walking tour. That's the River Seine. Roast duck for supper, the Eiffel Tower, and then getting our haircuts. Then we moved on to Russia here. This is in the subway system. And one of the Russian Orthodox cathedrals, my missionary friends. That's Red Square in the background. That's the Duma, where the parliament meets in Moscow, and St. Basil's Cathedral on Red Square. This was on New Year's Eve. Riding the subway. That's Red Square. That's back in the subway system. That's the marble stop. There's the statue of Grandfather Frost and the Snow Maiden. The ice castles in the park. in a coffee shop, and back in the subway. That is mosaic tiles. Somewhere I have pictures of the tiny little tiles. There you go. Now we're headed out to camp about 2 hours outside of Moscow. And it was below zero most of the time. Some nights were 18 to 22 below. There's making gingerbread houses. The food I would not recommend at camp. It's not very good. This is dressing people up as Grandfather Frost. Making American s'mores over a campfire. There's our molasses cookies. That's the Russian banya, where you go in and you cook yourself and then go jump in the snow. Lots of snow. More of the subway in downtown Moscow. That's at Starbucks. Flying home. Then the girls came to Faith Bible Camp and we took them up to Grandview Drive in Peoria. That's where these pictures were. Then we took them up to Chicago for 3 days. Then the American college girls took them to New York City for a day and a half. This is around Chicago, Buckingham Fountain, Lake Michigan. I think that statue's in Peoria now. They moved from Chicago. That's at Moody Church. That's a map of the world where you put a star where your hometown is. I think there are only three from Moscow. The Willis Tower. The Navy Pier. Then these are the American kids who were going to Romania. We're switching to Romania now. That's at London's airport. We had a 6 and then the bottom is in Budapest, Hungary. These are Budapest, Hungary pictures. Ronald Reagan in downtown Budapest. The shoes are a memorial to Hungarian Jews that were killed in the Holocaust. They're on the banks of the Danube River. They would shoot them and push them into the river. And this is our beginning in Romania with a cookout. This is at camp. It was about a 2 mile walk to get a Coke. That's what we were doing that day. That's the dentist. Bible studies. That's my friend who got married. That's my dentist again. These are people I've known since they were 13, 14 years old. Bride had a playground for the kids to play. That church is thousands of years old. This is hanging out with some homeless kids that live at a shelter, and we took them out for pizza and a day in the park. Then we went to a nursing home out in a rural village also. This is at the nursing home. There was a horse farm next door. And this is the largest underground salt mine in Europe. It has an amusement park in the salt mine. Ferris wheel, bowling alley, rowboats, a concert stage. That's an elevator taking you down. And this is it's not the Grand Canyon, but it's the biggest canyon they have in Romania. We did a day hike there. This is in a medieval city called Alba Iulia. It still has the moat that goes around the city, and that's where Romania was signed into becoming a country. Then this is a family dinner that Tim and I got invited to. Baked fish was the menu, with the eyeball still looking at you. Packing up to say goodbye, come home. That's back in Budapest at a really popular Greek restaurant. That's coming into Chicago and then driving into the Faith Bible Camp parking lot. All right, I'm going to close in prayer, and then afterwards I can answer questions and stuff. Lord, thank you for the opportunities you've given Faith Bible Camp to reach out even across oceans and become friends with Eastern Europeans and Russians and even right here in our own neighborhood. Thank you for those opportunities. Thank you for the opportunities to share our testimony, no matter who we are, where we work, or what we do. Thank you that we are free to do that. In your name, amen.